Blog Talk Radio.
America, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. Information on disability rights, disability services, and your disability dollar. Your voice, an advocate, voice your concerns, voice your opinion, but please let your voice be heard. Our mission is to bring to you the people, the places, and the things that can change your life for the better, which means inclusion into society, which means living more independently in your home and in your community. America, welcome to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor, your friendly neighborhood networker. And our motto is increase your network and you'll increase your net worth. And behind microphone number two is the hostess with the mostest, Miss Renee, our studio manager. Welcome, our listening audience. Again, you're listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. I am your host, Reverend Radio Ray Razor. And even though I've been blind for more than 50 years, every morning I wake up and open these little peepers, I feel blessed. Howdy, David. And I know God is good. Good greetings to you, Miss Renee, and how are you doing today?
And to you also, Reverend Radio Ray.
Well, the show is going to be so packed full with information and thrills and chills, so we're going to jump right into our second part of our interview with our very, very dynamic, exciting special guest. So, Miss Renee, give us the lineup for the show and take it away.
I would be delighted. Now, many people are slowing down when there are 95 candles on their birthday cake, but not our guest. Herbert Douglas Jr. grew up with a father who was blind, when that meant few options for blind people, few options for a businessman, and fewer options for a black man. So why does this Olympic medal winner, successful businessman in his own right, feel that the Douglas Razor Foundation to honor his father is the capstone of his life's work? Welcome back, Herbert.
Thank you, Renee. Miss Renee, I'm happy to be back.
Amen.
this is part two of our interview with Herbert Douglas Jr. So go to our website, sightandvisionradio.com, to hear part one. And if you can't do it yourself, get some little 12-year-old to do it, because they'll get you right on, that's for sure. Now, so let me recap a few highlights from our first interview before we learn what put the fire in your belly to create the Douglas Razor Foundation that you're creating to honor your father. Now, you grew up in Pittsburgh, where your father was a businessman. He ran a livery and chauffeur business in the 1920s. And when you were five, your father's dimming vision became total blindness. And it just so happened that it was the day that your sister was born, and that was in 1927. Now, Herbert, when your father lost his sight, the prospects for a blind person were pretty bleak. Did he ever talk about that?
He very seldom talked about it, Miss Renee, but I'll tell you this. I analyzed my dad. Success as I got older, because I was 5 years old, I couldn't remember him really going blind. He was just blind the rest of all my life. However, my dad, he laid a good foundation with relationships. He was a chauffeur, and he came out of being a chauffeur after a few years. And you must remember, we didn't have automobiles until 1906 in this country. And if he was a chauffeur, back in 1918 and started his business, he was ahead of the curve, so to speak, in today's climate. Now, back in those days, they had chauffeurs and they had to take care of the cars. So my dad started a little business in a small place, and he did the maintenance work for the cars. And then he moved from a little garage to a garage that held 35 cars on Ellsworth Avenue. And then he was there for several years, and then he moved to a large garage that had three stories, one in the basement and three up on top. And that's where he housed these, they called them storage garage, not parking garages at that time in the 20s. And he was fortunate enough to be in an area of Pittsburgh that built, we would call at that time high rises, about 7 or 8 stories. But they never built garages for those cars, and that was the middle-income class client, and they stored their car in my dad's garage. And he evidently had around 2,500 to 300 cars, and I worked for him. I had to come out of school and work for him, and I was deferred because my dad was blind and he ran a business.
Now, you went to college. Was there any talk of you foregoing an education and just coming into the family business?
Well, my thoughts were that I was going to take over his business, but I went to college, and I went on a scholarship because in Pittsburgh, I did rather well in running and also in the state. I was state champ for 4 times in different events. And I got a scholarship first, not to Pitt. I got a scholarship to Xavier University. And I went down there in 1940, and then when the war started, my dad had to have help because he was sightless, and he couldn't get dependable work during that time because most of the dependable young people had to take defense jobs. And in taking defense jobs, there was a void. And I worked for him at night, 8 at night to 8 in the morning, 12 hours for 3 years.
Wow.
But the Lord blessed me and kept me in physical shape, and I became national long jump champion, and I got a football scholarship at Pitt, and that's how I got my education.
Wow. Now, were you living at home, or were you commuting from the University of Pittsburgh?
No, I stayed at home. At first, I stayed on the campus during the football season, but I wanted to be home. And I'd travel in to classes every day. I did that for the 3.5 years I was at Pitt and graduated. And I graduated, and then I kept going, and I got a master's degree. I'm sorry.
No, you answered exactly what I was going to ask. Now, when you would come home, I mean, since you were back and forth home, there had to be new dogs. Did your father ever talk about the changing of the guard, so to speak, the new dog that would come in?
Well, my job, it was over. He gave up the garage. And after that, it was after the war, late 40s. And I knew I needed an education because I wanted to be a coach. I wanted to be a coach of track and field. And at that time, there were no African-Americans coaching in Pittsburgh. So I had no chance, and that's how I got into the corporate arena with Pabst Brewing Company, and I worked all the southeastern states.
Now, just before we go to your professional career, let me just ask you one more question about sports. So you'd been recruited both as a football player, as a track star, long, were they calling it long jump then, or is that what they were calling it, the long jump?
Yeah, long. Well, it was called broad jump, but in America
jump,
it was called broad jump, but it was always internationally long jump.
Now, as your commitment to sports increased, what were your parents' reaction to you?
My parents, during that time, we never got the praise that these kids get today. I doubt if my parents ever told me over once or twice, we're proud of you, of what you do in sports. And I guess my dad really wanted me to go into his garage business, but we kind of thought the elite type of position during the 40s was teaching, because there were very few African-Americans teaching throughout the United States. So I wanted to teach, and I didn't get it, but I got in the corporate community, and it was a blessing in disguise.
Okay, now, when were you tapped to go to the Olympics, and how did that happen?
Well, in 1936, that's when Jesse Owens competed, and with six other athletes, and they won eight, including the icon, Jesse Owens, winning four out of the 15 gold medals won by the United States. These nine athletes, they won eight out of the total 15 gold medals. So that influenced those of us following that were 12, 13, 14. And then when I met Jesse Owens at 14 years old, I shook his hand, and he did say, you get an education. So that's one of the reasons that I went back to school, to get an education. And then you had to train. I had to train very hard to make the Olympic team, because to qualify on an Olympic team during my time, you had to place first, second, or third in the United States. So I placed second and made the team. And after 12 years, there was no Olympics in 1940. There was no Olympics in 44. And that was a 12-year hiatus of no Olympic Games. And I was fortunate to make it at the age of 26. And the icing was to stand on the podium and represent our country as the American United States flag was raised.
Wow. What an incredible story. Now, were you able to share that success, the training and the progress in sports with your father, and was he able to attend any of your events?
No. Dad only attended one time in a local meet, and I was long jumping, and then I fouled a couple times, and he was with a guy, and the guy told him, tell Herbie to, I was called Herbie during that time, to move his marks back. He's fouling. So there's Dad with his standing up there with his seeing eye dog and telling me what to do, and he can't even see that I'm fouling. But that's the only experience I had with him. That's the only experience I ever had with him at a track meet. Now, Mom, she attended track meets when I was 8, 9, 10 in elementary school. She would sit up. And I remember definitely when I was in the sixth grade sitting in the stands with an umbrella. It was hot at Colfax Elementary School, and it was a city championship, and I won my weight. And she never said anything, but it's time for us to go home. But those were the times. So those were the times. But as I grew and knew the incredible character that my dad had, I to be in business 30 years and sightless 24, he was the top person in the Douglas clan, spelled CLAN.
Yeah.
And he laid the foundation for me to do whatever I really wanted to do, because he taught me four basics in life. I think I mentioned
that
at the last time.
I want you to hold that point, Herbert, because I know what they are, and we've got to take an ID break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to start with that point. Reverend Ray, can you tell me to whom they are listening and where they can hear interview number one?
Welcome. You're listening to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. And you want to know more about us, please visit us at www.sightandvisionradio.com. Or you can email us at sightandvisioninfo@sightandvisionradio.com. And for those who want to hear some real live voices, call us at 301-377-6468. That's 301-377-6468. And you're tuned in to the www.blogtalk.com/marketingpulpit. We're heard here every Friday, East Coast time, between 3 o'clock and 3:30. So please tune in to Sight and Vision Disability and Senior Talk Radio Show. Now back to our host, this with the mostest, Miss Renee.
Well, our guest is Herbert Douglas Jr., the last surviving African-American 1948 bronze medal winner, and he is here to talk about a project that is near and dear to his heart, and that is the Douglas Fraser Foundation. And he gave me a perfect segue just before the break. Your father was an African-American with a dog and as a blind person with a dog, but I love a quote by your father: "I would rather walk 2 miles with a dog than have a person lead me a block." Did this independent spirit influence you?
Definitely. I'm independent now, 95, and it's only because he was independent. And he did everything in a simple thing like dressing. I never saw him go out of the house without a tie during that period. And then he always, my mom would lay out his socks for him and things like that. But he'd dress himself just like I would dress myself. So he had the basics to be professional, to be have the right charisma. And when people saw him, he was always properly attired. And that was because he laid the foundation there with my mom, because she was his eyes for the next, after he went blind at 41, she was his eyes for the next 51 years. So I learned, and I'm the same way. I go out every day. I'm dressed for the occasion. Now, what I didn't realize until I got older, I never realized what Dad had done. And one of the most important things, I wanted to do something for him, but never got around to it until Reverend Razor called me on a national program and said he had a seeing eye dog. He knew about my dad. He wondered how my dad could get a dog in 1930, because you had to be self-supporting. And we talked on the phone, and I was really carried away, because I'd been on many programs, and no one had ever called me and said they have a seeing eye dog. And so we built up a little bond, and now he influenced me that I can't wait any longer. We have to do something and form a foundation or association and recognize Reverend Razor and Herbert P. Douglas Sr. Foundation or association, so we can, the mission will be to help young people receive seeing eye dogs, and that is vitally important, because this year Reverend Razor has walked with a seeing eye dog for 46 years. My dad walked for a seeing eye dog 46 years. And when he got his sixth seeing eye dog at the age of 90, he was the oldest man in the world walking with a seeing eye dog. So that has to...
We have to build on
that.
That
is something that we're going to work.
Well,
what'd you say, Renee?
Reverend Radio Ray, have combined your vision. Reverend Ray, I want you to jump in here also. What is the vision for the Douglas Razor Foundation?
Well, the vision is, Ms. Renee, is that we want to honor Herbert Douglas Sr. because not only a person of color, African American in the 30s, to be able to have their own business. I mean, today there's only about of the millions of people that have businesses, I think it's only about 1.5 to 2 million persons of color, African American have businesses, and believe it or not, there's no more than 100,000. That have employees. Most of the people that have businesses that are African American, they don't even hire people. So for Mr. Douglas Sr. to not only be a businessman in the 30s and to be able to change other people's lives and support their lives by hiring people that work for him is remarkable. Remarkable in itself, it was not easy for Caucasians to get a seeing eye dog. So for him to be able to break into that, and even now, persons among blind groups that have dogs are somewhat considered elite because it is not easy to use a seeing eye dog. A lot of people think all you do is put your hand on the harness and tell the dog to take me to the store and the dog just goes. No, it doesn't work like that. You have to have good mapping skills. You have to present yourself in a way Mr. Douglas here is talking about how you carry yourself in terms of dress. One of the biggest things is for a person that's blind is a grooming. A lot of people do not expect persons that's blind to look nice, to be well-groomed. That's why, like Mr. Douglas Sr., Mr. Douglas Jr. here, when I step out of my house, I make it a point to look professional because they don't expect of us. So he was way ahead of his time. And so we need to honor such a trailblazer with a foundation because still there's very few, it's only a handful of African Americans that receive seeing eye dogs in the United States here. And a lot of times they don't have the support financially to be able to go to school, have the different equipment, because equipment is very expensive for a blind person to be able to have a playing field. So a couple of the other things that the foundation is going to do, not only support blind persons of color that wants to get a guide dog, but also we want to support them and being able to be a business person if they want to be an entrepreneur. We want to be able to financially support them with training, giving them grants for training, giving them grants for special equipment to assist them, and also the para athletes. There's a lot of para athletes that's blind that want to participate in the para athletes, the Special Olympics, and all. So we want to be able to focus to support them in terms of them achieving and the type of dreams that they have in sports. And Mr. Herbert Douglas Jr., he understands that what support it takes to be able to be part of this Olympic, because you have to train, and you don't, unless you get sponsors, you don't have the money to train to be able to have airfare and transportation to go to some of these meets you have to be in. And then a person that's blind, sometimes they're going to need assistance. They're going to need So those are three basic things that we wanted to help cover in this Douglas Foundation. One, to assist a person to be able to get a CNI dog and help them. Two, to be able to get a person with a CNI dog that wants to start their own business, to get them the training and the equipment and tools. And three, also help a person that's blind that want to participate in amateur sports. And we want to honor Mr. Douglas Sr., reflecting on the shadow of Mr. Douglas Jr. With this foundation. And the other thing, Ms. Renee, right now, there's no African-American disability organization that serves, that are decision-makers that serve African-Americans, persons with disability in this country. As great as this country is, 350-some million people, I think African-Americans is something like 12% of the population, over 43 million. We have no organizations that are headed by persons, African-Americans that are headed by organization for persons with disability to make decisions. So because Mr. Douglas Sr. was a man and a person of stature ahead of his time and a trailblazer, we want this foundation to be well financed to be able to help individuals, young and old, to be able to pursue and have the type of lifestyle and have the fulfilled life and effect on people that Mr. Herbert Douglas Sr. had.
Well, I think that
that's
you,
a wonderful
you bring
summary.
Your unique, you bring your unique background with Herbert as an athlete, with Mr. Douglas as a business person. And Reverend Ray, I know that you also have a business background, so you know the challenges of both being a business person as well as being a person with a disability. And you refer to equipment, and people are probably thinking, well, all they need is a dog and a little dog food. But you're talking about the electronic equipment that is fast changing every day, that does level the playing field so that a business person who is blind or low vision can compete actively. And I think you've answered the question why those two particular populations. Well, unfortunately, time waits for no man or woman. But before we wrap this up, Herbert, I would be remiss if I did not ask you about your father's quotation that informed his life and that has had such an impact on your life. It's just a few words, but they are very powerful words. Tell us a little bit about the philosophy that your father spoke to you and that has informed your success as a business person with Shifflin, with Shifflin Beverages.
Well, being an athlete, you have energy. And if you have negative energies as an athlete, they transcend to what? Positive energy. And I got that through my dad. The four basics that he taught me that anyone should follow, that is to analyze, organize, initiate, and follow through. Those four basics my dad taught me, and that's why I was a pretty good athlete, and that's why I went into the corporate world, because any negative energies I had, I was an athlete, and my dad was an athlete in his own right, and it transfers into being positive and having positive energy.
Wow.
That's what my dad taught me.
Absolutely. Analyze, organize, initiate, and follow through. It's a philosophy that can be applicable to anyone. Reverend Ray, I'm going to let you say goodbye to our guest. Herbert, it's been a delight as usual. So I'll turn it over to Reverend Ray to close us out.
Well, I certainly look forward to working on this foundation and making this something special. And those four words is going to be something when we set our website up. I mean, those four words is going to jump out at you on our stationery paper. Those four words is going to be right there. So we're going to and if we're fortunate enough to have a bill, we're going to be called. Elder Herb, I want to thank you very much. I look forward to us working together. And Miss Renee, doing Herb's 95th birthday that week. We received the Douglas Razor Foundation. We received our 501c3 determination letter. So we are, and you can go on the website of the IRS. And you can just go to that page, and you will see where we are approved. So, Herb, thank you very much. I look forward to talking to you many, many more times. And God bless you.
Thank you. Thank you, Reverend.
Our time is up. We thank you for your time. Until next time, this is Reverend Radio Ray Razor. Like to say, I might not have sight, but I can have vision. Vision, vision. God bless and be blessed.